This Christmas week on Art in the Air features two artists in the 2025 For the Love of Art Fair. First with oil artist Laurie Schirmer Carpenter, whose renderings of calming and nostalgic places, and next Ed Johannenmann, whose artwork combines photography, woodworking, and glass. Our spotlight's on award-winning journalist and author Joseph S. Peach, sharing his newest book, Lost East Chicago and Indiana Harbor.
Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. You're in the know with Esther and Larry. Art on the air today. Stay in the know with Larry and Esther. Art on the air our way. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world.
Welcome. You're listening to Art on the Air on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM, WVLP, 103.1 FM, our weekly program covering the arts and arts events throughout Northwest Indiana and beyond. I'm Larry Breckner of New Perspectives Photography, right alongside here with Esther Golden of The Nest in Michigan City.
Aloha, everyone.
We're your hosts for Art on the Air. Art on the Air is supported by an Indiana Arts Commission Arts Project Grant, South Shore Arts, and the National Endowment for the Arts. Art in the Air is heard every Sunday at 7 p.m. on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM, also streaming live at lakeshorepublicmedia.org, and is available on Lakeshore Public Media's website as a podcast. Also heard on Friday at 11 a.m. and Monday at 5 p.m. on WVLP 103.1 FM, streaming live at wvlp.org. Our spotlight interviews are also heard Wednesdays on Lakeshore Public Media. Information about Art on the Air is available at our website, breck.com/AOTA. That includes a complete show archive, spotlight interviews, plus our show is available on multiple podcast platforms, including NPR One. Please like us on Facebook, Art on the Air, WVLP, for information about upcoming shows and interviews. And we'd like to welcome to Art in the Air Spotlight, he's a region native, and he writes, if you haven't read the Times lately, he writes a lot in the Times of Northwest Indiana, and it's taken him all around the South Shore and Northwest Indiana, and it's produced several books, Lost Hammond, Indiana, 100 Things to Try and Do in Gary, Northwest Indiana, Things to Do Before You Die, and he's got a new book out that's familiar with a lot of people, and I think you would like it. If you're from the East Chicago, Indiana Harbor area, it's called Lost East Chicago and Indiana Harbor. We'd like to welcome to Art in the Air Spotlight, Joseph S. Peach, and he's going to tell us all about that book and some of the other things he's got going. Welcome.
Very nice seeing you again.
Thank you so much for having me. Yes, my new book is Lost East Chicago and Indiana Harbor. It was written for the History Press. It's part of the Lost series, which is about kind of vanished and bygone places, different communities across the country. Locally, Jerry Davich, fellow Times columnist, wrote Lost Gary, and then I wrote Lost Hammond for the series. But they have these books in, you know, there's a Lost Milwaukee, Lost Chicago, and so on. They have them for cities, you know, all around the country. I thought East Chicago in particular has been kind of very underrepresented. Like a lot of the history in this state, it tends to either focus on the Indianapolis area, or if it's in Northwest Indiana, the story of Gary has just this very dramatic kind of rise and fall trajectory. So a lot of the local history tends to focus on that. And I feel like you have a lot of very storied communities that are very underrepresented in the pages of history books. East Chicago is definitely one of those. I feel this, there have been multiple good books that have already been written about it. Jane Amison's East Chicago, Archibald McKinley wrote Twin City and a couple other ones, but it's been well over a decade since there's been any kind of like general interest history about East Chicago. John Frere wrote a good Mexican Americans Playing Baseball in East Chicago book, though. Mm-hmm. But the thing about it is it's such a rich layer. There's so many layers to East Chicago. It could easily be multiple different subjects, could be book length on their own. You have just a very rich history of, like, you know, machine politics, a very rich history of immigration, a very rich history of heavy industry. It really was a steelmaker to the world, like a mini arsenal of democracy. And then a very rich history of, you know, pollution and so forth. But there's all, and sports, it's the city of champions. They've had, it was the only city in the state with back-to-back undefeated high school basketball championships. And basketball is a huge, huge thing there. It was, it produced many, like the winningest NBA coach of all time, Greg Popovich. It produced Junior Bridgman, one of the best six men of all time for the Milwaukee Bucks. And it was really a charged rivalry back when Washington and Roosevelt were playing each other. People compared it to like the Celtics and the Celtics and the Lakers. And then there's just like little known bits of history that a lot of people wouldn't have realized. Like Michael Jordan had played his first ever game in a Bulls uniform at Washington High School. I interviewed multiple people who were there that night to watch history being made. Unlike my previous book, Lost Hammond, that one kind of focused more on the general history Hammond and kind of like a lot of newspaper accounts and, you know, publications from the Historical Society and, you know, other documents and so forth. This one was heavily based on interviews. I really tried to capture the feel and what it was like to grow up there, because in particular, with East Chicago generally and with Indiana Harbor in particular, it just holds such a magical nostalgia for a lot of people who grew up there, because it attracted immigrants from all over the world because of the steel mills. They had over 100 different nationalities there at one point. A lot of people just have these very romantic notions of growing up where, you know, 6 or 7 languages were spoke on the same block. There was a different church for every ethnicity. There was all kinds of different ethnic food, the odors of which were wafting through the neighborhood as people were out grilling. People would share food. People looked out for their neighbors. Everyone was almost kind of equal because everyone's, you know, parents worked in the steel mill. But there was a sense of camaraderie and unity that people had, and a sense of that a lot of people who moved away said they haven't been able to recapture anything since, because it just filled with all these like compelling anecdotes about, you know, with the ethnic issues. Like, for instance, people would go to like a Lithuanian church where the priest spoke a different language if their sins were particularly bad that week, in the hope that they would get some leniency and things like that. But there were stories about like meeting someone where you know, she was Mexican and he was Greek, and they neither spoke English, and they were trying to communicate, and they eventually ended up getting married and everything. But it kind of details like how that came about. But it's just based on a lot of like stories about the rich tapestry of going up there. There's a lot of like, you know, stuff that people tend to romanticize, like Hot Dog John's, Taco Joe's. The Inland Steel Christmas parties are very popular. They used to have a zoo. There was the baseball stadium. There are old movie theaters like the Vogue and the Indiana Theater where people were entertained for years. But there was just, there's also components of, a lot of like, you know, there was some crime in the city. John Dillinger's big bank robbery was there at the First National Bank downtown, an architectural treasure that was sadly raised to make way for a Walgreens. And the bullet holes were visible up until the end when it was torn down in the 2000s. But then there were some, you know, unsolved mysteries like of Jay Givens and, you know, so forth that the book kind of explores. But it just kind of tends to look back at like a lot of the places people have these nostalgic romantic memories for, like the Mademoiselle shops. But it also recalls some of the bit more of the offbeat history. Like there was Jimmy the Mummy, a local funeral home had that they would like let kids see for like a nickel back when they're far more lax regulations with that type of thing. There was a hermit that was kind of notorious, like locally, who was kind of a figure of local lore, but it kind of explores, you know, all those things. Bolita, the big house, a lot of the industrial neighborhoods they built, like Pullman in Chicago was built by Pullman, but Chicago had its own industrial neighborhoods, Marktown and Sunnyside. Marktown designed to look like a, you know, village, an English village, by the noted architect Howard Van Doren Shaw. And, you know, but it just really tries to capture, you know, what the place was like, what the people were like, all the city's various accomplishments on the athletic field, in terms of heavy industry, in terms of supporting the war effort, in terms of being just a magnet for immigration that brought people together from all over the world. A lot of people who grew up there thought it was a really special place, and that's what I really try to capture in the book.
Well, real quickly, in our last few moments here, tell us how people can find your book.
Oh, it's available at all local bookstores, Miles Books, Green Door Books, The Press in Valpo, Barnes & Noble's, Books A Million. Any of the fine retailers in Northwest Indiana that carry books will have it. The new Barnes & Noble in Cherville should have it when it opens, but anywhere with books pretty much will have it.
Well, it's Joseph S. Pete, and he's written a new book. You can find all of his books at these locations. Joseph, thank you so much for coming on Art in the Air Spotlight and sharing your journey.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, congratulations on the new book.
Oh, thank you.
Art in the Air Spotlight and the complete one-hour program on Lakeshore Public Media is brought to you by McCauley Real Estate in Valparaiso, Olga Patrician, Senior Broker. And as a reminder, if you'd like to have your event on Art in the Air Spotlight or have a longer feature interview, email us at aota@breck.com. That's aota@breck.com. Art on the Air would like to take a moment to wish our loyal listeners a very happy holiday season. Esther and I very much appreciate your support for our weekly show over the years, and we hope to continue to bring you the very finest guests locally, nationally, and internationally from the arts, music, theater, culture, and then, of course, the happenings around the region. May your holiday season be filled with peace, love, and joy. And thank you for your support of Art on the Air.
Hi, this is Dorothy Graydon. I'm a contemporary artist in Northwest Indiana, and you're listening to Art on the Air on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM, and on WVLP 103.1 FM.
We would like to welcome Lori Shermer Carpenter to Art on the Air. Lori is an accomplished, award-winning landscape oil painter. She states her landscape paintings depict that feeling of a contemplative stillness caught in a moment before or after natural events, such as daybreak, sunset, rain, sunshine, mist, or fog. Her paintings are studies in mindfulness, peace, and the essence of the land, and they are all of that and more. Thank you so much for joining us on Art on the Air. Aloha and welcome, Lori. It's really wonderful seeing you again.
Thank you, and thank you for inviting me.
Well, and I've been working on trying to get you on the show for a long time, but of course, you being part of the upcoming 2025 For the Love of Art Fair finally prompted you to do it. So I'm so happy to have you. You know, we are on several overlapping boards and organizations together. But our audience always wants to know about our guests. And I tee it up by saying how you got from where you were to where you are now. So tell us your origin story.
Okay, well, I grew up in Freeport, Illinois, about 100 miles west of Chicago and 100 miles east of the Mississippi River and 15 miles from the Wisconsin border, so in the middle of corn and dairy country.
Ooh, hence all the landscapes, yeah, beautiful vistas.
Landscapes. Yeah, it's very hilly there, much more than around here. But I had four brothers, no sisters, and my only art training actually was with my mother, who taught all of us how to draw. She was an art major for 1 year in college, and her grandfather, who was paying for her education, died, and so she just had that 1 year. But she went on later in life to get a license for interior design, which she did all of her life. And my only other art was Friday afternoon art classes with the nuns. Went to Catholic school. And so I think that's why Friday is still always my favorite day. Just loved the art part. But my high school.
What type of art were you doing?
Well, they would do little lessons and we would follow the lessons. But I was always drawing on my own at home, and several of my friends and I all, you know, we were drawing Elvis and all of Fabian and all the rock stars. And when it came time for college, art really wasn't on my mind because our high school did not have an art program. So if that might have been very different if it had. But I was always the one, always tapped to make posters and invitations and things all during high school and after college, newsletters, doing, you know, illustrations and stuff. And I did get married right after college at Loretto Heights College in Denver, Colorado. And so everything, you know, I just was a housewife, and which I don't think you can say that anymore, but had two children and was always interested in art and seeing art. And when my kids got into junior high, I just thought, well, maybe it's time. And I re-enrolled in school in Denver for art, just someone seeing if there was anything worth pursuing. And I just really fell in love with it. So
those that were paint started to do paint before, or was it mostly drawing?
Just mostly drawing. Okay. I didn't do really any painting. So when I started, The drawing classes were my favorite, but then you'd have to take basic drawing, basic design, basic art history. And so it took about a year to really get into painting, which I really fell in love with.
Were you painting landscapes at that point, or because you had talked about drawing Elvis and more figurative things, Fabian?
No, kind of then it was do what you want. I hadn't thought too much about landscape. I was just trying all different things, and it took me a while to get through all that. I did, since I already had a degree, all I had to do was take the art classes. And I also fell in love with art history. And so I did a double degree. I got a BFA in painting and a BA in art history, which is, I was fascinated by how much art was influenced by history and vice versa. So that was what I was doing for about 6 or 7 years, and graduated from the University of Colorado at Denver in 1988, and got into some little groups there where we would critique each other's work and enter shows together. And so I was really getting going there, and then my husband was transferred to Michigan, and we moved in 1990 to Ann Arbor. And
well, that's being smack dab in an artistic community, though.
It was a great place, a really great place. And I hooked up with a group called the Ann Arbor Women Painters that started back in 1951. And it was a juried, you had to be juried into it. And there were meetings and 3 juried shows a year. And that's where I met all my art friends and really loved it. And we were there for 11 years. And then my husband retired, and we moved to Northwest Indiana to be closer to our younger daughter, who lives in Oak Park, Illinois. And we were close enough to be really involved with them, but not so close that they could call up and say, hey, we're dropping the kids off this afternoon. Our older daughter still lives in Colorado. She said, no, I'm not leaving. But it was kind of a shock coming back here after being in Colorado with the mountains and coming back to the flatland. But on the other hand, we have the most spectacular skies in the Midwest, more than even in Denver. I mean, everything is so sunny there. You don't get a lot of clouds. And so that's really what I started painting when we were back here.
And was it mostly, did you take up oil right away, or did you make a transition to that, or how did you land in oil?
I actually started back with pencil, colored pencil, graphite, and although I did watercolor in college, I liked oil better. I like how you can just keep blending it, and
you have time.
The colors are so more vivid, much more vivid, and so that I've been just doing oil since then.
So you've been widely exhibited throughout Northwest Indiana. You're part of the groups. I think tell us about maybe some of the groups you're involved with and some of the exhibits you have been in the past, and maybe even awards that you've won.
Hey, well, I was part of the Southern Shore Art Association, which is now defunct.
Unfortunately.
Yes, unfortunately, for sure. Mm. And I'm a juried member of the Area Artists Association of the Lubesnik Center. I belong to the Chesterton Art Center. I exhibit fairly regularly at the Elkhart Regional Juried Show.
Yeah, you're there right now.
Yeah. And I've won several purchase awards there. I exhibit at the Chesterton Arts Center. I enter juried shows all around the region. So in Illinois, I don't do as many as I used to. I decided that, I mean, they're great on your resume and when you're building a resume, but after a while, you don't need to, I think, do as many. Because it does get expensive, the shipping and entry fees.
And also you're opening the field for other people to win awards.
That's right. Absolutely. I've been accepted in the Hoosier Salon, and I had a painting at, I think it was called the Hoosier Women Artists, sponsored by the Lieutenant Governor of Indiana, and had a painting hanging there for a year.
So yeah, that's exciting.
Yeah. It was very exciting.
Have you ever done any art fairs or things like that? We were talking before the show, of course, but other art shows. But you're going to be in For the Love of Art Fair in February. That's in South Bend. But have you done that before, or is that something going to be new to you?
For the Love of Art show? I did the second one that Shireen did in Elkhart. Like, I'm not sure, maybe 10 or more.
I think more than 10 years ago. Yeah, many more than 10, I think.
And then for, I don't know, one reason or another, I didn't continue with it. And she kept sending me things saying, come on, do this. And I thought, well, maybe it's time. So I'm doing it this year in the first and second of February next year. I do a lot of art fairs, or I have done a lot of art fairs. And they're fun and exhausting.
And yes.
Dependent on the weather, which makes it some kind of difficult. I was looking forward to doing the Madison Chautauqua Art Fair in Madison, Indiana, at the a few months ago, because they said they have like a 45,000 or 50,000 people coming to it. So we're all hyped and ready to go for that. And then Helene happened. And they got a lot of blowback from that hurricane. Wow. So the day we were supposed to set up, there were like 40-mile-an-hour winds and rain. And so we sadly backed out of that one. But so...
You know which one I miss? I miss the Schoolhouse Shop art fair.
I used to do that.
I know.
Yeah, that was a fun one. Very small, kind of a boutique-y art fair.
And the grounds were so beautiful. It was just so nice to be there.
Oh, I'm so sorry that they don't do that anymore. But I've done Chesterton Art Fair several times. I used to do it almost all the time when they were at Hawthorne Park.
Right.
And I've done it a few times since the move. I do St. Charles, Illinois. Done Rockford, Illinois. I do the Lebesnik Festival. And I've done South Bend and Kalamazoo and South Haven, Michigan.
So the whole region.
A lot. But I've never done more than five in a year. And now I'm cutting back to maybe like three a year.
One thing I always ask our artist guests, you're an accomplished oil artist, but is there an area of art that you'd like to explore that you have yet to explore? Like I said, okay, I've done this, I've accomplished this, whether it be sculpting or whatever it is. You know, is there something else that you would like to maybe try your hand at?
Actually, I am right now exploring cold wax with oil. And during the pandemic, I took an online workshop to learn about cold wax. And so I've been fooling around with that. I've had some successful sales with it. It's just very different. I mean, you can do so many different things. So many cold wax paintings are abstract. And I've been kind of fooling around with maybe getting a little more abstract using that. But it's, I always seem to end up back in more figurative style. But it's an interesting medium. And I have fooled around a little bit with encaustic, with some friends who had setups, but that having to keep it, the wax heated and stuff, the cold wax is much easier to work with.
How fun. Have you ever done ceramics or any more dig your fingers into the medium?
No, only as a requirement in college. And
what is your studio practice like? How much time do you devote? Do you devote a bit of every day to painting?
Yes, I try to paint every day, at least for several hours at a time. My studio's at home, so I do get some interruptions. I can throw in a load of wash and stuff, but when need be. But yes, I try for several hours. I used to paint almost all day, but my stamina is not what it used to be, so I do a few hours in the morning, a few hours in the afternoon.
So are you always working from a reference, or are you just sometimes do you just freeform your landscapes, or are you looking at maybe a photo you took?
I do plein air sketches and paintings and photos. So I take all those things back in the studio. I'm not a good plein air painter because I paint in layers very slowly. I can't whip out a painting in a morning like some of these really wonderful artists.
Well, it shows in your paintings. They're so luminous and you have such a distinctive style. I don't even have to look when I'm at a show, I don't even have to look at the name tag. You know, you just, your palette and, you know, your hand is just so evident.
Thank you. Thank you. But it's, so I use all of those things, and some of the landscapes are composites of several places. Some are completely made up from memory. The longer I do it, the less I have to rely on specifics. So it's kind of fun. And the cold wax is taking me more in that direction.
Yeah, you have to be more spontaneous, right?
Yeah, and it can't be so picky.
So we're coming up, you know, like any events that you have coming up, like next year, you know, we're going to be plowing into that. Like, you have any shows that you're in or exhibits or art fairs besides For the Love of Art Fair, obviously, in February?
Well, I'll be in a show at the Ancillary Gallery in Chesterton called Home for the Holidays, and that will be up all of December.
That's a lovely space.
That's and a
Christina
wonderful
is just
space.
Like, I just want to give her a great big hug for doing it.
She is really wonderful. So nice to have that in Chesterton. And let's see, I am doing the For Love of Art in February, 1st and 2nd of February next year.
Well, and so you have things that are coming up through, of course, they can probably find out information on your website, right, which we'll give that web address a little bit later.
So do you think, do you know which shows you're going to be doing next year? Which ones are you targeting?
The Elkhart Show and the Hoosier Salon, South Shore Arts, and we will be in... Next year, I think it will be May, the Area Artists Association will be at the Miller Gardner, Marshall Gardner Art Center.
Very nice.
That is a very nice large space. So everyone will be able to have up to five pieces, which is nice when you can see a lot of art of one person to the other.
I remember us discussing it at the meeting because I'm in the area artist also. And I'm thinking a lot of my pieces are all 20 by 30. And I thought, oh, well, good. I'll get a chance to put more of them in there.
That's right. Just tell them to haul out more of those movable walls.
You're right. That's right. True.
Yeah.
The other things we always like to find out is, and, you know, this is kind of going back a couple of years, and you touched on it briefly, is about COVID and how that impacted you. Was it a bad time? Was it a negative time? Or were you found that was a creative thing because you were kind of shut in?
You know, it's kind of all over the place. Some days I thought, well, yeah, this is great. I can get going on things without any interruptions because we're not doing anything. But then at the same time, it was also very isolating. And we did Zoom meetings, of course, but I don't know. The art classes online were very helpful, kind of. But I'm sure glad that's over. Hopefully it's over.
Right.
I mean, but this isolation, sometimes it, you know, really messed up my sense of time. And I'm not sure that's quite all back yet.
Right. I know for our show, real briefly, it caused us to go to the format we do now where we pre-record the shows and we're able to schedule guests as opposed to doing it live in the studio and then sending out the recorded show later. But yeah, it ended up being a plus for us. But yeah, during that time, it's rough. And some artists found themselves being very creative and other times they were felt like the world was coming to an end. And
I know.
Well, we're coming up on our last moments here, and we want to give you a chance to tell people how they can find you online, social media, and things like that.
All right. They can get in touch with me through my website, which is LoriShermerCarpenter.com. I don't do social media anymore. I've stepped back from that. So I know it's really out of the mainstream thing, but I feel better about not
sure
doing it.
Okay. Well, we appreciate you taking time to come on Art in the Air and sharing your art journey. Lori is going to be at the For the Love of Art Fair, February 1 and 2. That's in South Bend at the downtown. And you can see her work there and also other places. Lori, thank you so much for coming on Art in the Air and sharing your arts journey.
Well, thank you for having me. It's been fun.
Yeah, thank you so much, Lori.
Thank you.
Hey, this is Josh of The Empty Pockets, and you're listening to Art on the Air on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM, and on WVLP, 103.1 FM.
We are happy to welcome Ed Johanneman to Art on the Air. Ed's award-winning artwork combines his love of photography, painting, woodworking, and glass in a manner that conveys a sense of motion and depth. He employs both stained glass and kiln form glass in his sculptures that also can include the above-mentioned disciplines. He will be an exhibiting artist at the For Love of Art Fair in South Bend on February 1st and 2nd of 2025. Thank you for joining us on Art on the Air. Aloha and welcome, Ed. It's very nice meeting you.
Well, thank you. It's very nice to meet you as well.
We appreciate you coming on the show and completing our series of artists that we have in the For the Love of Art Fair. And, well, we always want to find out more about our guests, their origin story. I always like to say how they got from where they were to where they are now. So tell us all about Ed.
Okay, well, I was born in Louisville, Kentucky, and I reside slightly outside of there now. I was born into a blue-collar family, so my folks, while they appreciated art to a certain extent, weren't enthusiasts, didn't have an education in that. So I started at an early age drawing and playing around with that. And eventually my folks decided that I might have a little bit of talent. And I took some independent classes in drawing, mostly a little bit in painting. And then I got interested in science. So for a big chunk of my education or my early education, like say elementary school and middle school and high school, I didn't do so much artwork as I got interested in things like biology and environment and that sort of thing. So until my senior year in high school. And then I took an art class again, fell in love with it all over again, and decided that rather than going to the sciences, I wanted to be a photographer. So, yeah, I was in scouts, and I had my, one of the leaders was a photographer and had a dark room, and I was pursuing my photography merit badge, and he invited me in the dark room, and, you know, people don't get to experience this much anymore because we don't have dark rooms, but I made a print, put the paper into the developer, and watched an image come up, and it was just magic.
It was magic.
That is so cool. And I was hooked. So I went to school, started at Berea College, took a couple of years there, did some photography for one reason and another, wasn't unable to afford to be able to continue there. So I left Berea, went to U of L for a year, and then got a job as a professional photographer, not having finished my degree. So, but at that time, back in the 80s, they were more interested in a portfolio than a degree. Soon found out that, at least with the people I was working with, it was going to be extremely difficult to raise a family and continue my photography career. So I went into printing and worked for a printing company. After I left there, I bought a sign company, had it for about 5 years until 2008, 2009, when the economy dove. I found out in January of 2009 that 7 of my top 10 customers had bellied up over the holidays. So, yeah, that pretty much took care of the sign shop and also made me realize that unless I wanted to work for $10 an hour, I needed to finish my degree. So I went back and went back to school, finished up at Bellarmine University, took a sculpture course, and changed direction, at least as far as my artwork was concerned.
What medium were you using in the sculpture class?
Stone.
Okay.
Yeah. Our final project for the class was alabaster. So I finished a nice alabaster piece several years after the course finished because I did well enough on it to get a good grade in the course, but I wasn't happy with the piece. So I just kind of set it aside and pondered it for a while and finished it up, like, I don't know, 3 or 4 years after I left school. In the interim, I've worked at a couple of nonprofits. I've worked as a handyman. As I mentioned, I grew up in a blue-collar family, so most of the stuff that we had repaired when I was a kid, my dad and my grandfather would repair it, and I'd watch. So it's a skill that, again, doesn't seem to be real prevalent. But then my current wife and I built a house, and we designed the house, which is something I'd always wanted to do. And we built it in such a way that she had wanted a soaking tub in front of some windows. And we designed it that way. The house has been framed up. She walks into the house after the framing's done, steps into the shower, looks at her tub, looks out the windows. Wow, the view is great. Oh no. If I can see out, they can see in. It's not going to work for the shower. I'm like, I don't want curtains and I don't want blinds. We've got to figure something out. And I said, hey, we'll just put a couple of stained glass panels in the bottom of the windows to block the view. You'll still have your light. It'll be beautiful. She's like, well, great. You can make them. I don't know anything about stained glass. That's okay. I'm getting you a course for Christmas. So that's how I got into glass.
Oh, that's such a wonderful story.
Yeah, she's unintentionally created a monster that way. And then because I tend to like 3 dimensions better than 2 in terms of creating, it didn't take me real long to figure out that I needed more dimension to the glass work.
You're sort of creating small installations.
Yeah, Well, having the home improvement background and the handyman background, I was familiar with woodworking. Having owned a sign business, I was familiar with how those types of things would work. So there's elements from building signs that I can incorporate into my work structurally. And then the flat panels, you know, once you do the cartoon or the drawing for the panel and you cut the glass and you start assembling it, you're kind of stuck with what you've done. So the assembly, my work tends to be somewhat philosophical or contemplative. So I'm constantly evaluating what I'm doing as the project is moving along. And I'd get halfway through the project and think, you know, this would be really cool if I'd have done this instead. But you're already locked in. Whereas with the stained glass work, doing it in dimensions, it became more of an additive form of sculpture where I could add elements to the piece or subtract elements out of the piece and
move
keep going
around.
Because, right, it wasn't locked into a specific pattern. So I ended up creating a piece. My mom suffered with dementia, and that's what she eventually passed away from. And I got fascinated with what that means, where the memories go. You know, it's something that's, you're handed this big thing and told, this is what's going on, and okay, well, what do you do with that? And it got expressed in my artwork is the easiest way I can say it. But the final piece, two pieces I did, I wanted to incorporate photographs into them, which meant I wanted to fire the images into the glass. I didn't want to use decals.
Right.
So I talked to a friend of mine who does fused glass, and she's like, well, here's how we can do that. So we did this project, and the piece was accepted at Artfields in Lake City, South Carolina, which is a huge show. And I came to the conclusion that, well, I need to get a kiln so I can continue doing the photographs that way. And then, of course, the next thing that happens after you get a new piece of equipment is, well, gee, that's nice, but what else will it do?
Right. How can I push it?
So that's led me to getting into fused glass. One of the avenues I'm wanting to explore is glass casting. I'm doing cold work now with the pieces I'm making, using grinders and things to polish the glass. So it's opened up a whole new avenue, and it allows things to build. You know, it's a situation where everything that I've learned since I was a little kid somehow gets incorporated into what I'm doing next.
You know, and it seems like you must have been really attached to the natural world, because even your stained glass includes feathers and insects. And so do you enjoy the outdoors?
Yeah, I do. Like I said, I was torn and I sat down to register for classes in college, the first semester of college, and I was torn between going biology or art. Mm. And as you can well guess, there's not a lot of classes that overlap. So I had to kind of make a decision right then which direction I was going to go, and I chose the artwork. So, but it was a tough call at that time as to what I wanted to do.
I guess Grey's Anatomy would be the one crossover between that kind of things. I want to go back and explore your photography a little bit. I don't know if you do that anymore as a standalone, but tell us a little bit about what you did in photography, being a photographer myself, mostly fine art photography. But tell us a little bit about that equipment you use, things like that. But, you know, and then we'll move that and how that you talked a little bit of how you incorporate that in your current work. But I'm curious about your previous photography life.
Okay. Yeah, mostly what I did was portraits. I love doing portraits because if you can do it well, which I did, you capture the person in a way that expresses who they are rather than just a photograph of an individual. Or I guess you want to capture that individual rather than just a person. So I really enjoyed doing portrait work. And of course, that led to weddings. So I did a lot of weddings. which is, you know, I've heard wedding photographers complain about doing the stress of doing weddings. And I'm like, you have no idea until you shoot one on film.
Oh, yeah.
Because I had a back fail one time at a wedding, a camera back. And I had no idea until the film was processed if it failed on the third frame or the 32nd frame.
Oh.
So, and the wedding's over when I figured this out. So it's like, okay, here we go. I did some fine art photography, but mostly I was trying to make a living with it, and I couldn't figure out how to navigate the fine art world and make money at the same time. So, and then once I lost interest once everything went digital, because a lot of the fun that I had with it was in the dark room. I loved doing black and white work. I loved the tones of gray. And all of a sudden that's gone because everything's gone digital, and I didn't have the space for my own private dark room. So there it went.
Right. So you've completely abandoned digital. You never made the crossover? Or?
I didn't until I started doing my current artwork. And I wasn't real excited about doing it then, but I made a discovery, which was I could spend a lot of money having somebody else photograph my work for me for submission to show. Right. Or I could buy a little bit of equipment and do it myself and pay for everything within like the first three pieces. So,
sure. Well, and then
I got into digital.
And you incorporate what cameras do you use currently?
Currently, I'm using a Canon T8i. And I have started doing more like landscape and nature photography right. stuff since I've gotten into this, because I've become more acquainted with Photoshop. I have this love-hate and relationship with Photoshop. Well, it's like every time I think I figure something out, they change it.
Well, the trick is to have I have a standalone copy. I still have CS5, and I don't have that subscription. So it doesn't change. I have an immovable object, because I know it's like how they do with a lot of times software, or like even things like even Facebook and some of the things, they all of a sudden they change something and it doesn't work the way it was. So, but once you kind of master Photoshop, you will see some of the same things, magic that you do in a dark room, because it basically is based on a dark room and layering and things like that. And so, yeah, it's, mm-hmm. but I know what you mean. There's the magic of the dark room and the chemicals and the smell and everything like that. But, I spend a lot of time in Photoshop. So,
yeah, I do too. Now, not as more than probably I would like to, because I'd rather be working with glass, but, I do have to, the images I make now I'm processing through Lightroom and Photoshop.
Right.
You're listening to Art on the Air on Lakeshore Public Media 89.1 FM on WVLP 103.1 FM.
Speaking of images, but translating to glass. So you have this piece behind you. Can you explain the genesis of it? Like, what were you thinking to come up with this piece? I mean, I could ask that about all of your pieces too, because they obviously have meaning.
Well, that particular piece is about 8 years old now. It was actually created during the campaign of the first Trump campaign, 2016, I guess it was. And the piece is titled Portrait of Self, America. And you probably can't tell because I'm blocking part of the piece, but there are mirrors that are incorporated into that piece so that when you look into it, what you're seeing is a fragmented view of yourself looking back out of it. And the thing that I was interested in or trying to convey with all the partisanship on the left and the right and the extremism and everything was that, we all share the country. We're all citizens of the country. And in being that, we all own a piece of it. And we're all part of the problem or part of the solution. And it does, you know, I wasn't interested in expressing any particular political ideology. What I was interested in was trying to get people to look at themselves and understand that they have a piece in what's going on. And it's not the other guy or the other gal. It's yours. What are you going to do with what you own? Because, and I chose that one again because, frankly, I'm terrified. For better or worse, it is what it is. But I felt like it was appropriate to bring that back out because it doesn't seem like we've learned anything in the last 8 years. So
would you consider that one part of kind of your permanent collection then?
No, that piece is actually, I sold that one.
Okay.
I create artwork because I feel like it should go out in the world. So if I'm keeping, I've got one or two pieces of mine, most everything else I've sent out to find its way in the world. Or I'm trying to send it out to find its way in the world.
Well, and describing the piece, because obviously this is radio, so people know it. It's in a frame, and it's an American flag that's kind of shattered with the glass in back of it and barbed wire. So that just so people can kind of maybe visualize or my description there, but it's sort of an American flag in glass that's sort of shattered. So with the glass, yeah, it's quite moving of a piece.
Yeah. Actually, it's being pulled apart. If you could look at the piece up close, you'll see that there's stitching that's being, like, it's the flag is unraveling and coming apart that way. And then the wood that it's framed in is actually American chestnut.
Oh.
Which is a species that, for all intents and purposes right now, it doesn't exist.
Right.
Except for on a small farm where they're trying to figure out how to bring it back.
But, you know, and also, so you do these sculptures, but then you also have functional pieces that are so lovely and unusual, not your typical necessarily fused glass. And I'm sure that's where all the excitement is for you as you, like, again, push how far you can go and what you can do. So they're very, so do you want to explain how that, I know you got the kiln for the fused glass and that's led to the functional pieces.
Yeah, I've got functional pieces. I do glassware. And I use a lot of stained glass cutting techniques to assemble those pieces. And then instead of soldering them together, I fuse them, which allows me to come up with patterns and things that you don't often see in glass.
They're very exciting. There's such a nice dynamic and tension.
And then it's also, I'm starting to fuse sculptures, or they're wall pieces. And I've fused a few sculptures. One of the current things I'm playing with is a manta ray, a manta ray. I'm fascinated by the way they move and the fins and that sort of thing. So I'm playing with several different versions of that and seeing where I can go with it. And then faces are another thing. I've been playing around with fusing glass standing vertically on edge as opposed to being flat in the kiln. So it's kind of interesting learning how to control that process.
You know, something we ask our artists occasionally, or I do at least, is there an art that you have not done that you'd like to explore doing, something away from what you're doing with your specific sculpture type work that you're doing?
I'd like to learn to weld. I'd like to be able to do larger pieces, but I need to be able to structurally weld stuff together. And right now, that's just, I don't have time for it. It's on my bucket list, though.
Well, that's great. Well, we're getting close to our last minute here. We want to give you a chance to talk about shows that you have coming up and, you know, your website, social media, how people can find out all about Ed.
Okay. The shows I have coming up, I've got For the Love of Art coming up February 1st and 2nd. And then after that show, I have one in Kentucky, in Lexington. It's the Kentucky Crafted Show. And that is the first weekend in March. So those are the two big shows. If you want to see my work, I have a website, glasschisel.com. And Glass Chisel, C-H-I-S-E-L. And I'm on Facebook and Instagram under Glass Chisel as well. So that kind of, you can go explore what I'm doing.
Right. We'll also have a link with your picture that's on our website. We'll link you directly to the website and everything. Well, Ed, we appreciate you coming on Art in the Air, sharing your whole art journey, photography, and how it's all evolved into what you're doing. Ed Johannenman will be at the For the Love of Art Fair February 1st and 2nd in South Bend. You can see his work there, and you can also see his other work by going to glasschisel.com. Ed, thank you so much for coming on Art in the Air and sharing your art journey.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, thank you so much. It was so interesting. Thank you.
Thank you.
Coming next week on Art in the Air features a return visit with nonprofit executive Alan Harrison discussing his new follow-up book, Scene Change 2, about nonprofit arts boards. Next, retired design and art director Norbert Shimkus sharing his work as a gifted ceramic artist. Our spotlights on For the Love of Art Fair at South Bend Century Center coming February 1st and 2nd. We'd like to thank our guests this week on Art in the Air, our weekly program covering the arts and arts events throughout Northwest Indiana and beyond. Art on the Air is heard Sunday at 7 p.m. on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM, also streaming live at lakeshorepublicmedia.org, and is available on Lakeshore Public Media's website as a podcast. Art on the Air is also heard Friday at 11 a.m. and Monday at 5 p.m. on WVLP 103.1 FM, streaming live at wvlp.org. If you have a smart speaker like Amazon Alexa, Google Assistant, or Apple Siri, just tell to play Art on the Air to hear the latest episode. Our spotlight interviews are heard every Wednesday on Lakeshore Public Media. Thanks to Tom Maloney, Vice President of Radio Operation for Lakeshore Public Media, and Greg Kovach, WVLP's Station Manager. Our theme music is by Billy Foster with a vocal by Renee Foster. Art on the Air is supported by an Indiana Arts Commission Arts Project Grant, South Shore Arts, and the National Endowment for the Arts. We'd like to thank our current underwriters for Lakeshore Public Media, Macaulay Real Estate in Valparaiso, Olga Patrician, Senior Broker. And for WVLP, Walt Breidinger of Paragon Investments. So we may continue to bring you Art in the Air. We rely on you, our listeners and underwriters, for ongoing financial support. If you're looking to support Art in the Air, we have information on our website at breck.com/AOTA, where you can find out how to become a supporter or underwriter of our program in whatever amount you are able. And like I say every week, don't give till it hurts. Give till it feels good. You'll feel so good about supporting Art on the Air. If you're interested in being a guest or send us information about your arts, arts-related event or exhibit, please email us at aota@breck.com. That's aota@breck.com, or contact us through our Facebook page. Your hosts were Larry Breckner and Esther Golden, and we invite you back next week for another episode of Art on the Air.
Aloha, everyone. Have a splendid week.
Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. You're in the know with Esther and Larry. Art on the Air today. Stay in the know with Larry and Esther. Art on the Air, our way. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart.